Chloe, and this is a new episode of I Never Shut Up Anyway. Today, probably my favorite guest so far to speak to, Miriam Ahmed is a poet. She is an Irish-Egyptian poet, and her new poetry collection, Truth Be Told, is out right now. It's on Amazon. You can buy it. And she's going to speak to us about that. And honestly, the interview is pretty lengthy, and I loved it so much that I just couldn't take anything out of it. So let's just hop right into it. I'm like really excited, like on an unbelievable level. I love the book. Holy fucking shit. Oh my God. I love it. It's so good. It's like, I said to you, it's like we sat down and I like poured my heart out to you and then you wrote it down. It's amazing. I love it.
Honestly, thank you so much. You've no clue how much that means to me, especially with this book, because that was what I was trying to go for. Like, I was really anxious about putting this book out because, like, the last poems in this book, as in the latest or the newest, I would have written about 3-2 years ago. So obviously I've seen myself grow professionally and personally then, like, much more than the poems in this book. But the reason I put it out was because when I was going through the stories behind these poems, what got me through it was reading other people go through stuff like that and making it out on the other end. And I wanted this book to be the same. I wanted it to be a reminder, like you said, to people who feel like they resonate with these poems, that they won't resonate with you without, like, forever. You will get through it and you'll come out on the other end and look back on them almost like a memory. So that means so much coming from you. Thank you.
It is. It's like, honestly, no thanks needed. It's not even a compliment. Okay, let me just get my thoughts together. The book is kind of divided into 4 bits, which is like me, you, us, and then world, which is, we'll get to that later. We're not going to dive into that now. But the first one is me, and you start the book with this really striking poem about sexual harassment called Medium. And it honestly felt like a knife to the throat because going into reading this, I was not expecting a poem this forward and red written, and at least not this early in the book. And you start, you know, by speaking of how your mother spoke of Cassidy, and, you know, you say, how could I then tell my mother that my precious name was destroyed? Which I think is the most, like, beautiful and saddening imagery ever. Why did you lead with this poem in particular?
Well, the book's called Truth Be Told, and I wanted it to speak on behalf of that. I didn't want this book to be filtered. I didn't want it to come from a professional standpoint of kind of what do people want to read. I wanted it to be honest, and I wanted it to reflect a lot of things that girls my age go through that isn't spoken about. And, you know, the assumption with poetry a lot of the time can be, especially coming from female authors, can be love and heartbreak and drama. And I wanted to recognize that poetry delivers and talks about stories that sometimes we can't put into words in a conversation. And for me, it was so important that this poem be the first poem on these pages because it allowed me to understand that once I put that poem there, I have to vow myself to the vulnerability and the honesty that I want these poems to hold in this book. So it was very scary. I contemplated it was the most contemplated poem in this book, definitely 100%. And prior to it being in this book, only like a handful, if even, of people in my life had read it. So to go from 2-3 people in my life being trusted enough to read it to putting it out to literally the whole world.
Yeah, I do think it's like, because I know what it's like to write something that's like, sometimes you write a poem and then you're at like the end of it and you kind of read it back and it's like, it gives you like, oh my God, I cannot believe I said that. And it gives you like this shiver of like, ooh, that was something, you know? And that doesn't happen very often because like a lot of, you can write about love, you can write about heartbreak, you can write about sadness, but like some things just come out like exactly the way that you feel them. And it's like this thing. And that's what I felt reading this. If I felt like this, what did she feel like writing it? You know what I mean?
I think the thing about trauma as well, and about trauma that comes from stuff like sexual harassment, sexual assault, etc., is that there's no way of knowing how it's going to affect you. And for me, the details behind this poem are things that I've actually you'd never guess it. Things that I've long buried, things that I've been able to hide so well, things that I still interact with on a day-to-day basis and still manage to get through my day just fine. But when I wrote this poem, this was my breaking point. This was the poem that allowed me to see just how much damage I've been hiding. And I was scared by putting it in the book that it would trigger that in other sexual assault survivors. But in a way, I feel like it's so necessary to have that breakthrough in order to start the healing process. And sometimes we don't take it upon ourselves to do that for ourselves. So I hope that even if it did trigger, it triggered to lead on to a path of healing rather than destruction, hopefully, I hope. I probably should have put a trigger warning. I didn't, so.
I mean, yes, but it's like, I understand that it can be triggering, but I think that any conversation that we're ever going to have about sexual assault is going to be triggering to everybody that has been through it. And it's a terrible thing, but it's also, I think, like, the triggering aspect of it is something that we need to push aside for a minute, because you know what? Speaking about it is a lot more important than how we feel, because we already all feel terrible. So, like, we might as well get up and say, hey, this happened to me too. And it's so important, like, especially recently with everything that has been happening. I saw you posted, Mariam, on your Instagram story after, you know, everything with, like, the sexual assault case and, you know, the new law changes. And it's, like, such an important, like, it's so, because it's people like you that you spoke about this before it was like, hey, everyone get up and say it. And it was like, you kind of paved the way for, you, like, you kind of, like, stepped over the shame and you were like, hey, that's not important. Like, shut up. Let me say what I have to say, which is, like, so important. And I have to, like, commemorate you for it.
Thank you. But I honestly think, you know what, every woman who comes forward, even when you're just telling a friend or telling a, you know, someone close to you, like, that in itself takes so much bravery and courage. And I think that's why, for me, when I wrote this poem, I think I centered it around my name. So, like, I pronounce my name Mariam, and I hate when people call me Mariam, and I've never liked the name, etc., etc. And I use that kind of as the middle ground of this poem, because you know as well as I do, particularly when it comes to these topics in places like Egypt, there is an extra added layer of taboo, an extra added layer of culture that we have to break through constantly. And growing up, like, my name was just fed to me as, you know, being beautiful because it meant, like, innocent, untouched, chastity, like, all these kind of notions that were drilled into me before I could even understand these concepts. And so when something like this happens to you and you live in a society that doesn't speak about it, that doesn't tell you it isn't your fault, that keeps reminding you that, you know, staying chaste is such a big part of being an Arab woman, when it happens, you feel like you amount to nothing almost. You feel like everything you're reared and taught to be is completely destroyed. And I know that's never, I know in my mom's case, it was never her intention, but I was still a bit offended. And now as an adult, when we have these conversations and I have these conversations with her, I say, you emphasize so much the importance of this without talking about something that, just based on statistic, you know, eventually, inevitably, could very well happen to me, to my sister, has probably very well happened to you. If we're going to, I'm not saying that things like marriage, etc., aren't important, and they are very important in our culture, but if you're going to have that conversation with your daughter, I think there's probably another conversation you should have there as well. And I was a bit resentful for some time that I only had a one-sided conversation with my mom for so long. So I wanted the name to be something that was centered to that, almost to highlight particularly Arab women in this conversation, and particularly the hardship there of breaking through that culture when you come forward and you say, me too. That's another layer that we have to go through.
I think it's like, I think honestly, there's a very big part of rape culture in our society, in our country, that depends, like, heavily on parents and, like, the older generation's acceptance of kind of, like, being able to speak about it. And, like, personally, I think that we're very blessed. Like, you and I, the fact that we're here on the internet and we have, like, phones and laptops to speak to each other, too, that gives us, like, a certain level of leverage that a lot of people don't have. And we've, like, educated parents, and we have, you know, we're speaking in a language that is not our own. So you've had this certain level of education that a lot of people have not had. And it's still so terribly hard to, like, break down and speak to your parents about it. And I remember I think it was like a month ago when, you know, the whole thing happened and it became like a topic of conversation. And I sat down and I spoke with so many of my family members. I spoke with my mom and my dad and other people that I'm just not going to mention who they are, but they, the women in my family were so quick to be like, I'm so sorry that I didn't give you the space to speak. Like, has anything like this ever happened to you? And thank God, and I cannot believe I'm thanking God for like not being assaulted, but I was like, no. But if it had been, I think about my little cousins and I think about, you know, all of these, because we have a lot of women in my family and I've never once thought to ask any of them. So it's like, also we need, it's like the rape problem will be not fixed, but it will be like half broken down what once parents break down the ice around like, oh, we're not going to speak about this. Like, no, this is like, okay, this happened to you. Don't tell anyone it's wrong. And I had a really important conversation with my dad and we did not agree on everything because, you know, whatever. But for the most part, he was like, if anything like this ever happens to you, tell me and I will believe you. Like, and that was like an important thing because I didn't think that I would, I honestly don't think I would have told him if anything had happened. And I know he listens to this podcast, so no offense, Bobo, I love you. But it's like, I just didn't think that he would be supportive, you know what I mean? But he is, and it's, like, an important thing. Yeah, go on, sorry.
No, sorry. No, no, no. I think that's so important. I think it's taking that first step, and how beautiful, like you said, is it when you kind of decide to confide in someone and put your trust there, and then you see that they 100% have your back, you know? And I think that's all children, like, whether it's now as adults or whether it's when you're younger, like that's all we need is just the reassurance that we've got someone in our corner to just listen, to just believe us, you know, especially because, yeah, I don't want to delve so much into it, but because when this happens, it's not always strangers, you know, like I always used to find it so funny. My mom was so strict about sleepovers when I was younger. She would be like, no, 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 you can't go sleep over in your friend's house. She was so worried that something, that someone could do something to me and yet never had the topic about sexual assault with me, you know? Like, it was just funny because there were certain notions where your parents are trying to protect you from things like that without wanting to have the conversation about things like that. And I think danger doesn't have to be outside of your own home. It doesn't have to be from a stranger on the street. And I think if you're not having these conversations with your kids, then they don't know how to feel okay to come and say what's happened to them, especially if it's gonna reflect on someone that they know, you know. So I think it's important, and I'm glad that your dad has your back like that. That's so important. Shout out, Dad.
I love you.
Shout out, Dad.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if he's going to listen to this because we had like a big argument about my podcast and he was like giving me his opinion about something. And then I was like, I didn't ask for your opinion. And then he was like, all right, I'm just never going to listen to it again. And then I was like, okay, don't. And then I think he's going to listen to it regardless, but it's, we'll see. Because he likes to know. He likes to know.
Yeah, I'd say he will.
Okay. Marim vouches for you. I bet he'll like listen to it and then come into my room and be like, why are you talking about me?
all good things. We're shouting at Dad.
So a really big kind of theme in like the me section of your book is family, and it's like prominently mentioned through the book. I noticed your poem called Mother's Love explicitly speaks about your relationship with your mom. Yeah. And I think that's like so brave of you, but I don't, to me, like, writing about family is the most nerve-wracking thing in the world. Like, I can write about my family very easily because it's, like, things that I feel, but I can't even imagine, like, putting it out and then having them, they're definitely going to read it because it's in your book, but what was it like, I could literally pass out thinking about it. What was it like speaking of your family so openly, and then did they read the book?
So, I'll start off by saying this first. My mom is an incredible woman. She is my rock. We're actually fighting at the moment, so I am saying this genuinely meaning it because, you know, it's not like my mood reflects it, but she is. My dad passed when I was 3, and she has been on her own raising 3 kids since, doing mom and dad so well. She's my best friend in the whole world. And for the most part, I can tell her everything. But like any relationship, especially when you're that close, and we are that close, we are so super close. Like, I'm the type of person that, like, I will, if I'm away, like on holiday, like I'll be sending her outfit pics, like getting her opinion, like, you know, even when like a lot of people in, I know in our families don't really always have this relationship with their mom, but even when it comes to my relationships, like I can be super explicit with my mom, like she's not happy about it, but we have a lot of trust. But when you're that close to someone, naturally, the good is amazing, but the bad is bad. And when it's bad, and I think we do have a bit of a codependent relationship, I'm not gonna lie, because I'm the eldest and I think she leaned on me for so long. And growing up as a kid, all you want is a childhood and to not have so many responsibilities, etc., etc. And I think it just strained our relationship, the fact that she was on her own and the fact that she leaned on me and the fact that I had so much to carry then, you know? So I just want to start off by saying that for anyone who knows my mom knows that like these poems are honest to how it sometimes is between us, but it isn't a full picture, you know? But for those who don't, and for anyone listening, she is incredible. She really is. But to answer your question, yes, it's nerve-wracking as hell. But I got to a point with my art, not just with my family, but with any subject that I write about. Honesty and vulnerability are the most important things to me when it comes to writing, because it's how I let go. It's how I can actually process, let go of things and move forward. And I kind of said to myself, right, if you want to start publishing your work, if you want to start putting this out there, what way do you want to do it? And it kind of comes back to the notion that I was saying about what this book meant to me. The art that saved my life is the art that was unfiltered, the art that artists put out without thinking of the backlash that they could face because of it. And I wanted to do that for other people because genuinely, I confided so much in music and in books growing up. And I think at so many moments in my life, it did save my life. And so I just wanted to be that voice for anyone else who feels like no one could understand what they're going through. Like, I would feel, and it helped me as well, by the way. Like, it was very therapeutic for me to get, I'd put out a poem like that. Like, I remember actually when I put Mother's Love out, I think I just put it out on like a post on Facebook or on my blog or something, like a good number of years back, because like I said, these poems are kind of old. And when I got messages from other girls that I knew from school or people I didn't know, and likewise with any work that I put out, and they say, like, this spoke so much to me, I didn't know that someone else was kind of going through this, like, I can't thank you enough for putting this out, etc., etc. Like, that to me is all, not even the validation, but that is, that keeps me going. Like, that makes me feel like what I do has purpose. And I think it became a bit of a high, like, to know that the first time you put out a poem and you're absolutely scared shitless and you're like, shit, like, I can't believe I'm putting this out and everyone knows who I'm talking about and my poor mom is the subject of of a poem that reads like that, sorry. After the first time, and when you see such a strong reaction to the first time of so many people saying, thank you for putting that out, I needed to hear that, it kind of goes away, it fades away. So yeah, scary at first, but now I'm kind of used to it.
What was it like when did she read, like, did you sit down and be like, I'm gonna put these out? Did you give it to her before you put the book out, or did you like just put the book out and you were like, read it?
No, so I she actually hasn't explicitly read the book. She reads, so when I had my blog, like a lot of these poems would have been on my blog before I deleted it. So when I'd put up new poems, she would read them through my blog, and she'd read that one through my blog at the time, I remember. And she I think we'd been fighting at the time, so I think she made a sly remark about it rather than like actually confronting the poem. But we've gotten to a point where she understands that my art is kind of off limits. Like, we cannot discuss it. Like, even when it comes to the other chapters, like love chapters, etc., etc., she wanted to start spreading my books around to like my aunts and uncles and cousins. I was like, no, like, this book is very personal. And she was like, why? Like, is it inappropriate? And I was like, no, but my art is off limits and I don't want the pressure of other people reading it and filtering myself because of that. So she kind of avoids it for the most part. And I kind of avoid ever getting her to read them. Like, I don't want to ever hand her a poem like that and be like, read it, you know? But we do have a conversation that my art is a reflection of how I feel. It's subjective. It is me processing my own emotions. It is not a reflection of who she is or who anyone that I write about is. So when I was going to start writing this book, I had two conversations. I had one with my mum, and I sat her down and I said, look, I'm putting out a book. It does include some poems around family, around yourself, etc. But it's the same poems from my blog, and I don't want it to jeopardize our relationship, but I just thought to let you know so that you're not blindsided. And we had that relationship and it went pretty okay. And I also had a talk with my ex-boyfriend, and I said the same to him. You know, we hadn't spoken in so long, and I called him the exact same call and gave him a heads up and said, look, like, I can't apologize for my art, I can't apologize for what I do, but I can, you know, because I respect you so much, I can call and let you know that this is happening, and kind of in a certain way kind of get not permission, but you know, have that conversation and make sure that you're granting people respect where it's deserved, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understand, especially with, like, your boyfriend, because it's, like, he's, especially with, like, love, I don't think that I would ever let a significant other tell me that I can't put a piece of writing out, because it's, like, family, I understand. Like, family goes way deeper than anything else, but even still, that, I think that's why I've been holding off so much on, like, putting a chapbook out or, like, a poetry collection out, because A, I do not, like, I cannot for the life of me take myself as, like, a genuine artist. Like, I put them out on Instagram and I know that they're good, but I also think that it's so terrible and I just can't bring myself to, like, but that's another conversation. And then I know that it's, I cannot put this book out unless I do put the poems about my family in it. And I don't know if I'm that person yet. I don't know if I'm the person who's like, listen, it's, because it's not, they're not about like, oh my God, I hate you. They're like, I love you, but no, you know? They're literally like, if you sum them up, you'd be like, I love you, but you're just such an asshole sometimes. Like, how, and it's not an easy conversation to have. And I think that the fact that you did put them in there, I think it's like poem two, Mother's Love is like the second poem or something. And I was like, this girl is badass. Like, how? Oh my God, how did she do that?
You know what? I know, like I said, it's not easy, but I completely agree with you. I think, like, you have to kind of envision what type of artist you want to be. And look, it's not to say I completely respect artists who choose not to put stuff like that in, because they're being true to what their limitations are and they're being true to what speaks best for them. And no one should ever kind of, you should never feel the pressure to put something like that out. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it was like, whether it was going to be published or whether it wasn't, I would have, like I said, I've been publishing them on my blog. I've been publishing them on my Instagram, on Facebook, etc. So for me, it's like, that's just who I am, even in my personal life. Like, anyone will tell you, I could sit down and give you my life story in 20 minutes flat. Like, I'm a very open person. I'm a very open book. And to me, anything that I live feels to me like it's out there, it's a part of me. I don't care what other people's input or opinion on it is. But in saying that, and I just want to take a minute to know what you said, first of all, can I just say your work is incredible. Like,
thank you.
You're like, oh, I can't believe you're 22. I couldn't believe you were 18. Like, that put me to shame. You are phenomenal. Your podcast, your writing, you don't write like an 18-year-old. Like, I'll tell you that straight out. Like, my whole thing with this book was looking at myself at 22 and feeling like I've reached a level of writing at 22 that I'm actually so super proud of, like, that I'm like, wow, like, I feel like this work is really kind of highly professional. And then looking at these poems, the latest being when I was like 19, just coming out of 19, and feeling like exactly what you said. I know they're good. But a part of me is still like, this is the worst of my work. Like, why would I even think to put this out? And this entire book, like, anyone will tell you, all I did was just, once it was out, was complain and feel anxious about the fact that it's out. Not because of the content, where you might think like, oh, she's probably freaking out because it's all about her family and, you know, such personal things about her relationship. I was like the contrary. I was like, these poems aren't half as good as my poems now. Like, I don't want people thinking that this is where I'm professionally at right now. But what I will say is, and if I may, I know shout outs are usually towards the end, but I get so many messages, and I really want to highlight this in the podcast for anyone listening. I get so many messages, so many DMs of people saying to me, it kind of like what you were saying, like, how do you do it? Like, oh, you're so badass, you've accomplished so much, blah, 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 all the kind of stuff. And while it is so flattering and I appreciate it so much, but I say this over and over and over again. I didn't just come up with this philosophy. Like, I didn't just like wake up in this mindset of feeling like I have enough confidence in myself and in my work to put it out. I learned it from like reading other works, from seeing other people, and from believing in people who have gone before me and come back with advice and listening to it and taking it on. And I am kind of known for this, but I have to say it because credit where credit is due. Russ, I don't know if you know Russ the rapper,
I do.
but yes, I am like number one fan, like die hard, like, obsessed with this man. And so much of it is for the music, yes. But I always say, like, even if you don't vibe with his music, like, I completely understand it's not everyone's cup of tea. But like, I literally have, I'd love to show you my bookshelf. I've got like my English translation of the Quran, my Arabic version of the Quran, my own book, my Florence Given book, which is amazing, and then my Russ book, and I have a book about Canada because I'm obsessed with moving to Vancouver. But like, these are like what I call like my Bible books. Like, I
I love
couldn't.
that you have like the Quran next to a Russ book.
I'm
It's like,
not yet.
yes,
Like,
this is
okay,
my religion and this is also my religion.
like blasphemy 101. But I'm genuinely serious. Like, I say it all the time. Like, if you want to believe in what you're doing, you're just gonna have to start somewhere. And that I completely learned from him. Like, for me, this book is a learning like step. It's like a stepping stone, and I have to accept that, understand that, and realize it's not gonna fly off the shelves. It's not gonna be a number one best-selling book of poetry or anything, but it's my stepping stone, and it's a pretty strong stepping stone. And I was happy enough to accept that, and that's completely thanks to artists like him who kind of push you into believing in yourself when you don't believe in yourself to begin with. I think I have them on my acknowledgements, like second person, and so like it's real. It's real.
First of all, thank you so much about like I love that you love the podcast because I honestly like be my best friend. I'm not kidding. No shame right here. I need more like writer friends. That's I all of my friends are
Agreed.
like my best friend does TikTok. Like that's what she like genuinely does. My other friends are like they're like I like music. I like this. And then some of my friends just don't really do anything. And then it's just me and I'm like I write. And everyone else is like good job, but like no one there's like not a Com there's like not a conversation to be had with anyone about it, but absolutely, I do agree that it's such a everyone puts so much fucking pressure on themselves, like on especially being 18. I feel like I've never put like a poetry book out. I'm never gonna how I'm so old. Like I've never I'm you're fucking 18. Sit the hell down. What are you talking about? And your first book, like. No author ever, I think. I mean, there has to be some authors, but like, no author ever has ever had like their first book be made into like a blockbuster movie. That's not how it works. You write 10 terrible ones, and then there's one that's like, oh yeah, this is the, and then you go on. So I think it's like important. It's, I know it. It's just get me to like convince myself of it. You know what I mean?
No,
Like, yeah, sure.
100%. And
And
that's a
you
work
know
in
you deserve
progress.
better, but you keep texting him anyway. That is what it's like.
That's exactly it. But you know what? The more you text them, the more poems you get out of it. I'm just saying. Like,
True.
I had so many times of being like, I can't believe, I wrote it, I think, in an Instagram caption. I was like, I can't believe the amount of poetry I've written about this after it took so much time in my life. Like, I can't believe how much this relationship has sucked out of my life. But then I was like, you know what? Like, I made a two chapters out of this book out of it. And then I'm making money off of his ass. And then on top of that money's going to charity. So I'm like, technically, I turned a breakup into goodwill. And I think that's growth. You got to give yourself some credit.
That's the golden rule right there, ladies. If you're not making money or poetry off of him, you dump his ass.
No. Like, you know what? I like for as long as it's good, that's fine. But if it turns sour and it's like you've kind of been done wrong, like, why not make some poetry and some money off of it?
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
you deserve it.
You do deserve
The
it.
least you could get repaid for, honestly.
Honestly. Yep. I do agree 100%. And also, I think I'm really not like that nervous. Sometimes I look back at my, because I've been typing out my journals, all of them. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just gonna type them out, and then we'll see, and then we'll see where it goes. And I was the first one. I think it was. Let me look at the date because I have no idea. But I think it's like 2017, 18, and I was like 15 or something. And they're good. Yeah. I don't hate them. I'm like, oh my god, why did I write so much about this one person? Like, screw that. Ugh.
Literally my entire experience.
Yeah, and I make it sound like I was so in love with, and it's literally like I didn't even like the person. That, it was just like, okay, like, yeah, but I write about it and it sounds like I lost the love of my life, which is, I mean, it's cool, but it's annoying. I think I'm like, ugh, shut up.
Yeah. I think I'd have to disagree with you there. So I definitely have those type of poems, but none of the ones in the book are like that. And I think that's what kind of calmed me down about them, because a part of me was reading back over them and feeling like there's this line in Lucy Dacca's song, and she says, in 5 years, I hope the songs feel like covers dedicated to new lovers. And I just love that song in general, but that line kills me because that's kind of what these poems feel like. I read over them and I kind of don't recognize the girl in them, but at the same time, there's this faint ache where I know that every single thing I wrote about this time was so felt, like I felt it with every aching bone in my body. And I feel like that says to me two things. One, that for the time that it lasted, it was genuinely as beautiful as I felt it to be. It was genuinely as real as I felt it to be. I definitely believe you can love more than once, but I don't know if you can love the same way twice, if that makes sense. And I feel like that was definitely a once in a lifetime kind of feeling and experience. But the other thing it says to me is that even when you're in, and this is kind of the message I wanted to portray, is these aren't the poems, like you said, like these aren't the poems that, you know, you're looking back on and being like, oh, I was so naive and so young. And these are the poems where you look back and you're like, damn, like that kind of hurt, you know, or like, I wonder what that could have been, or I kind of miss that person, or like, these are the poems that actually evoke that emotion again in you. And I wanted to kind of say with them that, like, you can feel this much for someone. You could swear that this is the only person you could ever love, that, you know, this is the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with. And I still promise you that even when you feel like that, and even if it doesn't go your way, and even if it all goes to shit, you'll still have a smile on your face, you'll still make it through, you'll still be okay. And you might not dive right into the next perfect thing, but you'll stand looking at those very poems that you thought you'd never stop feeling and feel quite distant from them. And I think what a beautiful feeling to know that, like, nothing, genuinely, everything is temporary, nothing lasts forever, no matter how beautiful.
Beautiful and sad, because the nothing lasts forever is like, good things don't last forever, but it also means the bad things don't last forever, which is comforting, but it doesn't feel like,
yeah, bittersweet.
When you're in like a spiral, and I've never really spoken about this, but when you're in like a kind of, yeah, a depressive spiral, and I've had these a lot, usually in the summers, because I'm a very social person, so I'm like heavily dependent on seeing my friends. I love my family, I love them, but it's just like they don't make, like, they don't, like, keep my mental health stable. If anything, they make it fluctuate. And it's like just like family, what are you gonna do about it? But if I don't see my friends, I always spiral really badly. And it happened like in summer of, I lost two summers to it, literally 2018 and 2019. And it's kind of like, also the thing when you look back at poems, to me, I don't look back at my romantic, or whatever you want to call them, poems, and be like, oh yeah, that's bittersweet. I look back at my depressive spiral poems and I'm like, thank God I don't feel like that. Like, thank, because it's like, oh my God, that was such a dark, it felt like putting your face in a black paint bucket and for like a summer, and then pulling up again. And it takes you like so long to see straight. And it's just, yeah, it's like, maybe I will put it out. Maybe it is going to be something.
Look, I'm telling you, I'm going to be lined up first person for an autograph.
I love you.
Honestly, you don't give yourself enough credit. I genuinely, when I found out you were 18, I was like, what in the name of God? I wish I had half the wisdom, talent, and work ethic that you do at 18. Like, genuinely. Insane. Insane. You're well beyond your years, genuinely.
You cannot see my face right now, but it is, it is, I'm like smiling really hard and I'm like low-key about to like
We're best
cry. I
friends.
love
Follow
you.
us. This is
I love
unreal.
you. Like, I love your work. I don't, it's not like, I feel like when I say I love you, people are like, but you don't know me. Yes, I do. I've read your poems. Shut up.
I'm the exact same. Don't worry. That I'm definitely, you know that episode, I don't know if you've ever seen How I Met Your Mother, you know, Ted Mosby, when he's like 2 minutes into the date and he's like, I love you. Like, that is me with my friends, that's me with my family, that's me, like, that is me. I just feel like if you feel it's valid, like, some people are
Yeah.
just that lovable from the beginning, and I completely agree.
Yeah.
I love you, Jenna. Honestly,
I love you
easy.
too. And you, my, I always say, I love everyone until I hate them, but when I hate someone, it is over for them. That is like, it is the end of the conversation. It is never going to change, and they have, just have to live with it. When, and that is it. They've been exiled. They've been exiled from my heart.
Honestly, I'm very strong on that first half. I need to learn a thing or two from you on the second one.
Oh my God, I can teach you. I honestly hate it about myself because I don't, I cannot say I hate many people. I think I can say maybe like one or two people, but boy, oh boy, is it done for them. Oh my God, there's like no going back. No going. They could literally be drowning and I'd be like, okay, get them out of the water and then move along. Like, just
Yeah,
go.
I think I'm like kind of similar in the sense of I hate very, very few things or like people. I wouldn't go as far as to say hate, but like it takes a lot to get me to that point. So if you do, it means like you must be like a very like it like to put it into perspective, it's still taking me like I'm still working through even feeling like I hate some of my like abusers, like people who I've known, like not strangers to me, but like people
Yeah.
who like I had known, I still find that a part of me is like not able to just hate them, even though I feel like I have every right to. But الجو العشرة ده بيفرق معايا كتير زيادة عن اللزوم يعني.
Yeah, I didn't know you could speak like proper Arabic.
Yeah, okay, loads of people don't think that. Yeah, like no, so I think it's a very Alexandrian thing about me. So my parents are Alexandrian, and I always get told the one where it's like girls from Alex are really pretty until they open up their mouth. But I think for me, it's like altered. It's like Miriam is so foreign until she starts speaking in Arabic, and then she's like gayam, you know, like my fish. There's no in between.
Oh, I think, you know what? I think girls who are foreign, who speak English or like Arabic are like really hot, but guys are just like bleh all the time to me. I don't know. I think I have like a very, I'm very fond of women. Like, I
You
love women.
know the funny thing is like I literally like my ratio of like guy friends to girlfriends is like insane. Like I've got so many guy friends, and like I hang around guys, like I during summer, like no joke, like one of my favorite things to do is so my friends play like football, like they rent out like pitches and they play football. Like I'm not kidding, like I have fights with my mom about my curfew because I just want to watch. Like I genuinely enjoy guys' company a lot, but I do agree with you that like sometimes there's just certain things that I feel like they just don't get, and it frustrates the hell out of me. And sometimes I just need to, but I'm not gonna lie, I think a part of it, like a part of why I like it is that I kind of enjoy being the not mom figure, but like kind of getting my guy friends to become more woke. Like I think my guy friends know, like if you're signing up for a friendship with me, like you are about to become just as big a feminist as I am. Like you will learn about these issues. You will like, you know, stand up for them. Like I do a lot of work. I don't want to say like with, but like yeah, like in a sense of we have a very educational friendship, and I think, I don't know. I think having guy friends that are like as close to me as my girlfriends means that they kind of get to see things from a female perspective, and I'm really unfiltered. Like I kind of give them everything in my life as it is, and I speak very honestly and openly about what it's like to be a woman, especially a woman in Egypt. And I think we've went on some pretty really like beautiful journeys together, like me and my guy friends, of just like getting them to go from point A to like point Z of seeing something that they've never even considered before, because when they're hanging around just like all guys together, like there's no perspective for women. There's no one to say like, wait, well, have you thought about like what it's like from our perspective or what this issue is like, you know? So I kind of am constantly calling them out on shit, and it's pretty entertaining, I'm not gonna lie. It's great. I love when I see my friends like go from, I don't know, speaking on the same topic like 6 months ago to like now, and seeing just how much they've grown and how much their opinion has grown. And I think that's partially because of the conversations that we have, and that I constantly make it a thing in our friendship of like, we can't just be friends with Mary, we need to be friends with the fact that I'm a woman too, and that includes like learning about things that I go through and like, you know, standing by me as a woman, not just because I'm your friend, you know. So it's I've got mixed emotions on men. I love them, but sometimes, my God, do I hate them. But I agree, women have the softest spot for me.
I love how you were like giving all these like viable reasons to be friends with guys, and then you're like, but I agree, like women.
Yeah,
are
yeah, but it's like, yeah, I agree in the sense that like women do have that like soft spot.
Okay, we've kind of like strayed really far because talking to you is just so fun, and I stopped looking at the questions, but yeah. Oh. We're going to go back. Okay, so you have a poem called "On Being Too Much," and if you haven't noticed already, my favorite part of the book is the first part, which is me, because it just feels like the most relatable and the most real part of it, which is... it's very raw. So there's a poem called "On Being Too Much" that really struck a chord with me. I have a poem called "You Can't Divide by Zero" that follows the same theme. Mind you, I hate it. I hate how I wrote it, and it's probably never going to see the light of day, but it reminded me of it. And this obsession society has with the mad woman persona and the hatred that goes hand in hand with that obsession. It's almost funny, and it, like, it's the circles that we're painted into. It's like sexy to step out of the circle and to have an opinion, but not too much. And it's hot when you're strong, but never stronger than a man. And it's exciting when you take charge, but never forgetting to make yourself like small again for your spouse, because God forbid a man feels smaller than you.
Yeah.
When do you think you first realized this paradox of like the mad woman persona and the love and hate relationship society has with it?
I think my whole life, like, I was like, before I could even understand what that meant, I was constantly told, you know, like, oh, you live in a bubble, you're so airy-fairy, like, everything is, you know, so overloaded for you, like, everything's so charged, and it painted itself out when I was younger, kind of to be, like, that dramatic sense, you know, that, like, everything was, like, I just made it into a big deal, I just, you know, but like you said, on the contrary, like it was strong or great or amazing of me to be the eldest child, to be carrying all this responsibility, to be, you know, powering through really big things, like carrying so much. But when a side effect of that is feeling so much because of the amount that I'm carrying, because of everything I'm going through, because I have the power because I went through so much, and because I've like had to carry so much, everyone was okay to let me do that as a child, but no one was okay with the side effect of that causing an uproar of emotions in me, you know, and for things to feel so heavy all the time, and for me to feel this constant need to like express and to let things off my shoulder. And then I see it in my jobs, like I see how, you know, people want you to be able to take initiative and to make decisions and to take a lead and do this and do that. But if you have an idea or an opinion that's kind of outside of what they want to go for and plan, it's kind of like, well, don't forget your place now, you know? So I saw it in loads of things like that. And then the most, and what kind of inspired this poem, was in my relationships, like in friendships, and particularly in my romantic relationship, like in friendships, it was that friends are so happy to take everything you have to give. They're so happy to, you know, load you with favors and this and that. But like, they don't want to hear you out when you're going through so much. They don't want to be there for you when every single favor that is being punched in starts to accumulate, and then you have no one to kind of hear you out or carry something for you, you know? But mostly and ultimately, it was because the paradox hit me the most was when I genuinely was told that when I was in this relationship with this person that the best thing about me was how much love I gave to others and how much I had to give and all that I did and the attention and care and everything that I resembled. Like, that was what made me beautiful. That was what made me worthy of this person's love. And then the very same reason that he's giving to others as to why we, you know, we didn't go, like, we didn't continue on is she loves too much. She gives too much. She cares too much. And I just found that so funny. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Because I could have said, you know, like, you're like, you kind of say to yourself, you're like, that's kind of what the poem's talking about. It's like, I'll teach it boundaries. I'll teach it limitations. Like, I could have done that. Like, I could have not exhausted myself into your dreams and aspirations and who you are and our relationship. But like, when someone kind of applauds that, like when your whole life you've been told that all that is too much. Yeah, like everyone in your life is like, too much, too much, too much. And then one person comes along and goes, actually, the too much that you are is exactly why I love you. Like, how you are is that's the very reason that made me fall for you. So you're like, oh my God, I can't believe finally someone appreciates the fact that, like, I don't know how to do a cup half full or half empty. Like, I'm like all in or nothing, you know? And I'm like, oh, finally someone understands that. And you feel so safe and you feel like someone finally, you can finally lay your head down here, you know? And then they turn around and they literally take the very same words that they like praised you with and they shoot it at you like a gun and they go, oh, actually, that's the very reason that I couldn't stay. Like, it's just too much. So you're like, oh, funny. Okay, then.
Yeah, I think it's because I'm very much the mom friend. It's like a known thing. I think I like you because like I see a lot of myself in you. I don't think we're the same person. You look a lot more calm than I am, but
don't be deceived.
But yeah, but it's like, especially with the too much thing, I think I'm not a person, I'm not a wallflower, like, I'm just not. I'm not the person who's in the room and ever quiet. I'm not the person who's, here's something and then is like, just let it go. I'm not, like, I'm just not that person. And I'm very much like, yeah. I love you a lot. And I have this, all this, like, love and care and attention that I'm going to give you. But it's also, in recent years, backfired very badly on me. Some of my closest friends that I've loved forever and ever and I've given so much love to and I would literally die for would not die for me. And it's not to say that we're not best friends and it's not to say that we're not the closest, like, there weren't some of the closest people in my life, and it's, I don't think that I can go without them, so I'm not even going to try to bring this conversation up again, but it's sort of like a wake-up call, you know what I mean? It's like, no one's going to love you. No one has your heart. That's like the worst, realizing that no one has your heart. That's like the worst part of it.
I think I looked at that very early on and I said to myself, right, like, you've got one of two choices. Like, you can't change who you are and you can't change who they are. Like, I can't change the fact that, like, for me, I'll always give 110%. Like, I don't know how to do a half-assed job at anything, not just in people, but, like, at my job, like, in myself. Like, I just don't know how to do it. So I said, either you can accept that, like, when you give your 110%, that you have to be okay with the fact that you may not get it back and understand that that's not their fault and it's not yours. It's just how it is, because I can't ask someone to tone down my 110% and I can't up their 50 to 90 even, you know? So I said to myself, you can either accept it and be okay with it, or you can be bitter about it for your whole life, knowing that genuinely, if the fault is going to fall on anyone, it probably falls on me. Because no one's going to say, like, like I said, you can't change someone else's effort, but you can change or like reflect your effort to match theirs. So it's a conscious decision. Either you see someone and feel like, you know what, I know this person's only ever going to be able to give me this much, but I'm still willing to give them the 110%. But you got to let go of, like, any negative feeling that comes with that. Or you can adjust your 110% and bring it down to match their energy. if that's going to make you feel better about it. But I just realized I can't really tone myself down. I've tried to, and in certain instances, like, I have been able to, where, like I said, someone has reached a point with me where they've pushed me too far. But for the most part, like, I'm 110% gal, and I just can't apologize for it anymore. And I'm not going to be upset if someone else can't reciprocate it. I'm just going to appreciate when people can, you know? Like yourself.
And it's, like, absolutely... I think it's the most beautiful thing about people. My favorite people. Like, I didn't know this about you, but I followed you. I think I found you through, I think I, do you know him? I think he shouted you out. Is that
do
how
I
found
know him?
Is that how I found you? I can't remember. It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Ike is, like, one of my closest friends. We've been really, really good friends for, like, 2 years.
Yeah, so I found you from that. I think you followed me first. That's why I can't remember. And it was... And I just loved you. Like, I walked into your page and I was like, I love this girl for, like, no reason. And you don't know. It's just, like, you're drawn to the people who exude the energy that you know. It's, like, so easy to pick out when someone is, like, 110% kind of person. It's like, wow, this person really does love with their whole heart. And at one point...
No, 100%, that was it.
Sorry.
No, saying that was it. That was exactly it for me. Like, I remember Ike shouted me out in his episode with you, and then I saw the post, obviously, like, your post where you tagged me in it. So I liked it, and then I remember scrolling through your work and being like, this is insane. Like, I can't believe this 18-year-old girl, like, writes like this. And I use my All Things Mare account, obviously, it's my professional account, so, like, I follow writers and stuff on it. I was like, even just for the writing, I was like, I have to follow this girl. But I completely agree, like, just since ever seeing, like, seeing your posts all the time, I was like, I'm obsessed. Like, you're insane.
Oh,
you're
amazing. I love you. Thank you. I've said I love you like 6 times this episode.
That's totally awesome.
You have a poem.
I hear it every time, but the first time.
Yep. That's adorable. You have a poem called Outlandish.
Yeah.
Which touches on a concept that I've seen passed around a lot the past few years, especially because I've been following a lot of more POC writers. So I make sure to follow people who of color because, you know, the white narrative is just not relatable, especially that I obviously write in English, but I don't live in a foreign country. So it's, like, very, 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 the white narrative to me is, like, what are you even talking about? Like, I have no idea what this is like. So I've seen it passed around, and it talks about being a foreigner in a country you live in, and then being a foreigner at home, in your homeland. So you've spoken about this, like, twice. What's that like?
So, yeah, so the other poem that kind of touches on it is Wanderers of the World, and it's more for everyone else. Kind of this Outlandish was more specific to me, and then Wanderers of the World was for anyone who feels like me. And it was inspired by a poem called Citizens of the World by Dave Calder, which was my favorite poem growing up. That was all I... So I'm born and raised here in Ireland my whole life, so, you know, obviously I'm Irish, and then my parents are Egyptian, so I'm Egyptian. So I never had a hard time understanding that I was both. I was Irish and Egyptian. Here I was one thing, and there I was another. That's fine. The issue arose was from as little as any, like 10 even. And I'd go to Egypt and people would be like, you're not from here, are you? And I would have no clue how they could figure it out because I spoke Arabic. I felt like I was the same as everyone else. And I'd be like, no, I'm Egyptian. They'd be like, no, like, you're not from here, you're not from here. And then eventually I'd have to be like, yeah, well, like, I live in Ireland. And then here, obviously, just because of how I look straight off, it's, where are you from? And I'm like, Wicklow. And people are like, no, where are you really from? And I'm like, Wicklow. And you probably get about that 3 times before you eventually have to say, oh, my parents are Egyptian. They're like, oh, I knew you weren't from here. And it's like, no, I am. But it fucked up my identity growing up, Jenna, like, genuinely, till this day. Even on things like I see it on my social media, I see it in my everyday interactions. I don't know why people, especially kind of in Egypt, like, are so invested in other people's lives. Like,
yeah.
I am, like, I will tell you, like, I don't have a big platform, you know? I'm very, very private. Like, the reason I have a professional account is because I don't let people that I don't know personally in on my, like, personal account. But even at that, like, I would see people who I've known, people who I've grown up with, people who I've hung around and did things for and, you know, been through experiences with, who still, like, love to, I don't know, like, if they see me do something that's classified as, like, Abe or, like, you know, inappropriate for our culture back home, like, in Egypt, they, like, what is Miriam doing? Like, what is, or there's people who defend me by saying, oh, but like, she's foreign, hey, Edna Bea. And both of them piss me off so much because I'm like, I'm me. Like, this notion of classifying people based on their actions, and it's something that happens a lot more to women than it does to men. It made me feel like if I stepped outside of this box of list of things I was allowed to do as an Egyptian, I wasn't allowed to claim myself as Egyptian. And if I stepped outside, so like here in Ireland, the equivalent of that was, you know, I don't drink, for example, I'm a pioneer. And you know what they say about the Irish, like drinking is such a big part of like our culture here, especially. And people weren't satisfied with the answer that I would give of just like, I don't drink, like I'm a pioneer. It was always like, oh, because of your religion. Oh, like, will you get in trouble? Oh, and like, do you know what I mean? And I just was constantly reminded every single day of being here and then every single day of visiting Egypt that, like, no one was willing to fully accept me as Egyptian and no one was willing to fully accept me as Irish. And for ages, I kept trying to please both of those boxes until I reached a point where I said, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I am both. I am wholeheartedly both. I cannot change the parts of me that are, you know, so Irish grown, and I can't change the things that my culture and my family life has instilled in me, and I won't apologize for either one. So I eventually, thankfully, got to a point where I was able to like be so proud that I get to have two different cultures instead of one, like that I get to experience the world through two different lenses, and that it means that I'm adaptable to live anywhere, because nowhere feels foreign to me. I go anywhere in the world and I feel like I could fit in here, because I've never really fit in anywhere that I was supposed to anyway. But the downside is that for people who find themselves a bit later in life, or until you get to a point where you're able to claim yourself as both, like, it's a really traumatizing experience for people to put you through, you know? It just is. I had like an incident a few days ago, and I just really want to speak about this because of what's happening right now as well with the burkini ban and everything that's happening. But I was saying to my friend the other day, so I used to wear the scarf up until I was like 15, right? And I remember so much of my experience in Egypt was really toxic towards it. And I know people who are, like, I still know till this day, who treated me very differently when I wore it and when I didn't. But I want to speak about my experience in Ireland for a second. So I had one incident when I was 15, and it was kind of the trigger point of me taking it off, where I was kind of tacked on a bus, and not to go into any detail, but anyway, I was like, it was racially motivated, and I was wearing my scarf. And I remember after it feeling like I was walking with this target on my back. And I remember after I took the decision to take it off, I took it off about late 15, just before I turned 16, kind of, and I haven't worn it since. And I'm now 22. And the other day I was like at my friend, and we were standing outside, and she was getting something from the Chinese shop or whatever. She was ordering food, and a bunch of people came over and poured a 2-liter Coke bottle all over me. And I was in a string top and shorts, and it was sunny outside, and I looked as Western or as foreign as you possibly could. And I remember going right back to that moment and feeling so stupid to think that the problem was ever anything I was doing or wearing, and feeling like if people want to have something against you, or if people want to see you as different, they will. No matter what you do to change about yourself, they will still see you as different. And it was weird that I didn't learn that lesson at 15 and only learned it like, what, so many years later, like 7 years later, just standing there and feeling like, oh my god, like it never was about, like, yes, I know obviously that was probably a motive, but in a sense of, to the people who want to be assholes and to the people who just are insistent on seeing you as different, even if you speak their language, even if you dress like them, even if you eat the same, even if you sing the same songs, etc., etc., the problem will always be them. It won't be you. And I think that's why it's just so important to claim yourself as you are, whatever feels comfortable to you, and just dismiss out the rest of the noise.
So we've been in quarantine. Are you still in quarantine, or are you done? I don't know.
No, we're not. We're opening up again. Yeah, we've pretty much opened.
Yeah, same. So quarantine has like affected artists and like musicians, writers, painters, whatever, in different ways. Some people have been like purging art, and some people haven't like touched it in months. How did quarantine affect you creatively?
It didn't. yeah, I'll tell you why. I very quickly, when this whole thing happened, My biggest fear was my mental health. I knew that, like, I'm like you. I need to see people. I need to be out. I need to be interacting. And the minute that was taken away from me, I said, right, like, if you don't get a grip of this, you are going to spiral and it is going to be ugly. Not even just like for writing or anything, just for myself. So what I did all throughout quarantine was, my friends thought I was insane. I would get up at the same time that I would for work. Now, luckily, my job, like, I would have done like 2 days from 2 days from home previous to quarantine anyway, and I worked from Egypt last summer, so I had gotten used to this whole working from home thing. It wasn't like something that came new to me. So I would wake up at like 6 a.m. every morning, shower, get changed as if I was going to work, sit at my desk, do my normal work hours, even though like technically I wasn't working, but I would like get up, like do work hours, like whether it was writing or whether it was working on like just things for my book or whatever it was, do my 8-hour shift, have my dinner, like do a workout, like do an entire day from the comfort of my home as if nothing had changed, and go for a walk, and that was it. The only time that I felt the effect of like what was happening in the world was when I went to the stores, and then I would see like everyone in masks and be reminded of like the panic and everything. But for the most part, I just kept a routine. And now, creatively, like after I put this book out, I knew I wanted to like rest for a bit, like I just wanted to breathe. So I did that, but I would find that my creative process was still intact when something would happen, like when COVID happened and, what was happening in Yemen. Like there was a few new poems that I wrote that I shared on my Instagram stories, that would just come out of me naturally, the same way my process always goes, where I would be triggered by something happening and I would feel like I feel the need to write. And I would. So I, for the most part, thank God, fingers crossed, like, yeah, nothing has affected my creative process so far. I think actually what's affecting it more right now is what's happening with the Me Too movement in Egypt and stuff. Like that has actually halted my process for a bit. I need to process, but quarantine, no, I was around.
That's really good. I'm quarantine didn't affect me negatively creatively. It affected me negatively, like mental health wise, for like a little, not for a little. Well, I can't really remember anything that didn't happen in the past 2 weeks, and my memory's like been fucked up. But I purged art, like purged. I started this podcast in quarantine. Like I think I was listening to this podcast called, I've never told the story, Directionally Challenged by, I don't know if you've seen The Vampire Diaries, but that was something that
I
I
know.
binged, like I binged the entire thing in a month, and that was like me pacing myself, like being like, you need to calm down.
Yeah.
And then I finished it and I was like obsessed with Caroline, which is like a character, and I loved the actress, and she's just an awesome woman. And so she has a podcast, so I listened to it. And then on, I remember I texted my best friend on May 25th, and I said, I want to start a podcast. And she was like, do it. And then I was like, no, people are going to think I'm pretentious. And then May 26th, I texted two people. And then May 27th, I had my first interview. And I put my first episode out on June 7th.
Yeah.
And I was, it, this is just like who I am as a person. I'm like, I want to do it. Let's do
Let's
it.
do it.
Whim, you know? So I would kind of purged. I just needed to consistently be doing something. So I had something to do. So I didn't like let my the dark parts of my brain kind of like
Yeah.
wrap their tentacles around the rest of it.
Oh,
So yeah, that was it.
100%. I think it's amazing.
I always have my guests, my beautiful guests, shout out three or more artists. So they can be writers, they can be musicians, they can just be your friends even, that you want to send some love to and that you think deserve more recognition. So go ahead.
Okay, so I've got a couple of people to name. Well, I've got a couple of people to shout out. So the first, and I'm actually shouting out something on behalf of her because she's currently taking a creative break. So when she's back, I'll probably be posting her stuff left, right, and center. But for the moment, I'm not gonna like tag her or anything, but I just want to name her, Sorcha Doyle. She is such an incredible woman. She is so strong, so fierce, and she does so much for women. She's a writer, she's a comedian, she does it all, genuinely. She had a blog, but she and I were talking yesterday, and we wanted, on her behalf and my own, to highlight the Me Too movement and to highlight everything that's happening right now with sexual assault. We want to shout out the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre here in Ireland, and that's on her behalf. And on my behalf, I want to shout out, just to say a huge massive thank you to every single woman in Egypt right now who is courageous enough to come forward and to share his story. You are doing so much for me and for women like me, and I am just so eternally grateful. So on behalf of Sorsha, that is the first. Second, two people together. So Casey Kandiwa and her sister Geraldine, they have Royalty Dancers is their kind of page for dancing, and Casey does poetry and singing. They are just feel good girls. Like, they make me feel incredible. They are so artistic. They've got a new podcast coming out. They're constantly killing it. They do so much for Black women, and they are just a breath of fresh air, and they get me up and groovy every single morning, and I love them. So I think you should definitely follow them for some positivity on your morning feed. And I also want to shout out Yasmin Adli, also known as Yazibel on Twitter and Instagram. One of the most incredible people I've ever had the privilege of knowing. She is a martyr. She is insane. She just takes women on her shoulders and carries them forward. And I am so proud to know her and to love her. She's incredible. Trying to think. I feel like there's someone I am forgetting. I think that's everyone. I wanted to keep it female only. There is a good number of guys I wanted to shout out, but I promised myself.
Tell the audience, or like the listeners, where they can buy your book and where they can find you on social media.
Okay, brilliant. So you can buy my book worldwide now, available on Amazon. The link is in my bio at All Things Mare, so Altingsmeor, on Instagram, and you can follow me on Twitter at Maryam Ahmed 19. So that is where you can get it. And thank you so much for having me on, Jenna.
Thank you for being on. I love you. I love you. I love this.
I love you too. Thank you so much.
And that concludes the best episode I've ever done, in my opinion, and should be your opinion too, because I had the most fun doing this one. Thank you so much for listening this far. Thank you so much for listening at all. Thank you for your constant support. Thank you for the cutest messages that you send me in my DMs. They literally keep me going forward. And I would be doing this if like only 10 people were listening to it. But I'm so glad that not only 10 people are listening to it. And thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I'll see you next week with a new episode of I Never Shut Up Anyway.